All right, so we were in the middle of the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, so we might as well start over from the beginning of it. Mishnah says, Ha'isha Shaholcha Hiro Baila Nesayam, a woman where she and her husband went overseas, or Balbama Meth Bali, and she comes and says, my husband died. Tinas V'titok Subasa, the usual rule, we say she's allowed to remarry. She's even allowed to collect Oksuba, as we had the previous Mishnah, an earlier Mishnah in the Perek, Machloik Shammai Basilo, where eventually Basilo agreed with the Shammai that she can even collect Oksuba. But the wrinkle is with Tzarasa Asura. As we said before, a woman cannot give Eidos on behalf of her Tzara, Lekula U Lechumra, therefore her Tzara remains Asur. Regardless whether her Tzara said that he's alive or he's dead, either way, you can't allow the Tzara to remarry based on the first woman's Eidos. And therefore, Haisa Basi Surah Lakayan Terecha B'Truma, the Rebbe Tarfin. So Rebbe Tarfin goes further with that. He says, well, if we're considering her that she's still married, then that means if her husband was a Kayan, this Tzara should still be able to eat Truma. If we're considering her that she's still for sure married, we completely discount what the Tzara said. We consider that whatever the Tzara said is a lie. Well, then she's still married. Her husband's still alive, so let her eat Truma. Rebbe Akiva Omer, no. Enzu derech metziat midei avera. No, that's not how she's going to get out of an avera. What happens, after all? I mean, if her husband's alive, it comes out that she's, if her husband's dead, rather, it comes out that she's a Zara and she's eating Truma. So no, we have to say that she's also to remarry, unless she herself says that he's dead, or she brings Eidos, or she brings Eidim, an Eid, or one or more Eidim to that effect. But she also can't eat Truma, as long as we don't know that her husband is for sure, as long as we don't know whether her husband is alive or not.
About her Tzara, right?
No, each one of them gets their own independent has their own independent silver payment. You're right. I mean, if there's a small estate, yeah, then that's fine. But we're not talking about that necessarily. We're talking even if there's a huge estate, even if the guy was Bill Gates, you know, he's got plenty of money to pay off both silvers. That's not the issue. Yeah. Tosfos, by the way, discusses the question: are we talking about when we're saying according to Reb Tarfin she can eat Truma? Do we mean even Truma Daraisa? I mean, wouldn't it be a little odd? One woman, you're allowing her to remarry, which means that you're overriding an Issa Kurdis and Mrs. Basin and allowing her to remarry, and the other one you're saying is the other one Reb Tarfin is saying is allowed to eat Truma Daraisa as if he's for sure alive. So Tosfos first starts saying maybe not, maybe it only means Truma Darabanan, and then they say no, you know, you have such cases. We had in Pesachim, for example, there's a case in Pesachim will also happen in a few weeks in Ksubas called Shnei Shvilin, where you have two paths, where one is known to be Tameh and one is known to be Tahar. Where, yeah, you know, you have situations over there where you know for sure that one or the other of them is Tameh, you know, that they came and asked Vazeh Chazer rather than Vasachas, and yes, you allow them to both consider themselves Tahar, even though necessarily one of them, by definition, has to be Tameh, but we say, you know, since each one came and asked individually, then we treat each one as we go each one can keep the Chazakah that they're Tahar, basically. No, they were talking about Tahar as far as Truma, Karbonis, etc. But the point is, the same idea over here. Yes, you can have that one woman is completely Mutter to remarry, and the other one is completely Osir to remarry, but Mutter to eat Truma. Yeah. Yeah. Another case. Omra Mesli Baili Vachkach Meschami. What if the woman comes and says, my husband died, and then my father-in-law died? And we learned in a previous Mishnah that a mother-in-law and daughter-in-law are not allowed to give Eidos one for another. We said according to the Chachamim, the idea is that we said everybody agrees that the mother-in-law hates the daughter-in-law because she figures she's going to consume everything that I brought into the marriage. And then according to the Chachamim, the daughter-in-law hates her reciprocally, Kamayim upon him. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, no, the daughter-in-law has a different reason because her mother-in-law bad-mouths her to her husband. So therefore, so again, Chinase v'titok subasa, so the daughter-in-law can remarry and collect her ksuba, v'chamoy sasura. And again, her mother-in-law is also the same idea. The Gemara is going to point out why we need both cases. And again, Hoysa Basi Sirol Akoyan Turkle with Truma, they're very powerful. Again, Reb Tarfin says if the mother in law was a Basi Sirol married to a Koyan, then she is even allowed to eat Truma in that case. Reb Akiva remains with Jerach Motia Medea Aveda. Reb Akiva says that no, that's not the proper way to get her out of Aveda. Adjitea Surali Nasa Basur Malacha with Truma, no, she's going to be offered to eat and she's going to be offered to marry and offered to eat Truma. Yeah, both. Same as in the previous. And the Gemara points out, Ritzricha, we need both of the machloikus in the Mishnah, both of the cases. Sai when it's two tzoros, and Sai when it's a mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. Di'i itmar hachka maisa, because if we only had the first case, we would say, Bahaka amr of Tarfin, which from the Tzaira the Gufra, then that's why Reb Tarfin would say, you know why we assume in the first case of the Mishnah, the two tzoros, we say that the first woman is definitely lying, and therefore we consider that the husband for sure must be alive, because Why do the tzaras hate each other? Because the tzara de gufa. Each one of them has a tzara guf that I'm losing out on tashmish because of my tzara. So therefore, we would say in that case, for sure, we would say she must be lying. Avachamoisa, the tzara mila d'alma, but when it comes to her mother-in-law, where the tzara consists of external things, either a matter of mamon or a matter of bad mouthing, whatever. It's not a deep felt tzara like a goof like that. Ema moedi le Rebbe Akiva. So maybe you would think maybe he's moedi le Rebbe Akiva. Maybe we don't know for sure that she's lying. We have to maybe assume that she is. That's why we can't allow the mother-in-law to be married. But on the other hand, maybe she's telling the truth, and the husband really is dead. No. So that's therefore we need that machlokas. We eat my baha, and conversely, if we only had the machlokas about the mother-in-law, we would say baha kam Rebbe Akiva. Maybe only there Rebbe Akiva is machmir on her because we don't know for sure whether the daughter-in-law is lying or not. Again, since it's only mila d'alma, maybe she's not, and maybe she's not. She doesn't hate her so much, and therefore we can't really be sure. Abu b'hach em amar d'leilat Reb Tarfon. But in the first case, maybe he would agree with Reb Tarfon. So therefore, we need both machlokas. Okay, who's the halacha like? Now, usually the rule is, whenever we have a rule, halacha k'Rabbi Akiva mechavei roi v'loi mechavei rov. That if Rabbi Akiva argues against one Tana, the halacha is like him. But if he argues against the Rabbanon in general, then the halacha is not like him. Here he's arguing against Reb Tarfon. Usually that would mean the rule halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. But in this case, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Tarfon. The Ravid actually seems to not have that girsa, because when the Rambam writes in Yad HaChazaka that the halacha is like that, then the Ravid jumps on him and says, what do you mean? The usual rule is halacha is like Rebbe Akiva. So the Mekorshim explain over there, Kesef Mishnah, others explain that, yeah, apparently the Ravid was missing these next couple of lines in his girsa of the Gemara. Amar Abaya, Afanan Nami Tanena, yeah, in fact, we can prove that the halacha is like Rebbe Tarfon from the continuation, from a Mishnah on Amud Beis. If she said, if a woman comes and says, she and her husband had gone overseas and they didn't have any children. So when they left, there was a chazaka that she's going to eventually be falling for Yibum. That eventually, if her husband dies, she's going to be up for Yibum. Now, she comes and says, Nitan li ben b'mdinas hayam, a child was born to me overseas. So now, meaning, in other words, that I don't have to do Yibum. Mes b'ni ba'achakach b'ayli. And then she says, then my son died and then my husband died, which puts her back to her original status of needing Yibum. Then Namenis, we believe her to do Yibum. Because her child died first before her husband. If her child had lived after her husband died, then we said she's potter from Yibum forever. We learned earlier it's a matter of Drachar Dachanoyam, but when the child died first, then yes, she remains Osir to not Osir, she has to do Yibum.
Name that I remember because the son died.
Right. Yeah. So therefore we believe her to do Yibum because she's back to her original status. When she left, she had a chazaka that she's going to need Yibum. Now she's continuing with that. But, Baili Vachkach Bini, but if she says, first my husband died, then my son died, Einer Nemenes, on the one hand, we don't believe her. We don't allow her, in other words, to marry freely whoever she wants, saying that I don't need Yibum or Chalitza. Rashi explains, we've been saying throughout this whole parak that we believe a woman when she says her husband's dead, and we allow her to remarry because we said Isha Daiko Mintzava, she's going to be very careful, she doesn't want to suffer all the penalties. When it comes to Yibum, there was a whole other matter. When it comes to Yibum, the issue is that, we discussed in a previous parak, this idea that the woman may really hate her Yavam, and she'll do anything to get out of marrying him, or having anything to do with him. Therefore, we can't assume this Isha Daiko Minsava in that case. Especially since, as the Gemara is going to point out on Amud Beis, and later on, that it's only an Isha Lav, it's not an Isha Kodesh, like it would be remarrying when her first husband's still alive. So therefore, she might think to be maitel in it. But the choshesh in l'dvareha, but the Mishnah continues, we do have to be choshesh for what she's saying. The fact is, if she's telling the truth and her husband died and then her child, then she can't do Yibum. Therefore, chalitzah t'volevis yabemis. And therefore, she has to do chalitzah just in case there is a zika, but not Yibum. She has to do chalitzah just in case.
If she's saying, then we have to leave it the whole way.
No, we don't. That's the thing. We're saying we sort of split the statement in two. Especially, the Meiri has a vort on it. He says, it later on in connection with the Mishnah, he says the difference is, one idea is also, he says, usually we say, you know, Milsa Davidu Lulu, Lemme Shakri Inshi. People don't lie about something that's going to be, that you're going to soon find out. But here, in the end, at the end of the day, the husband and the son are both dead. It's just a question of who died first. That's not necessarily Milsa Davidi Legluya. It's not necessarily like anybody's going to find the actual records and find which one died first. Yeah, she might feel she can get away with lying about it, because nobody's ever going to know the truth. Right. So therefore, so she has to do chalitza just in case, but she can't do yibum. And the
implication. Her plan works exactly what she wants.
Well, okay, yes. Yeah. And it, well, one thing, if she has to have chalitza, means she's now possible to marry a kohen. Okay, fair enough. Anyway, Ludvaraho who dechoshin. Now, what did the mission say? Bechoshin Ludvaraho. What's the mute Ludvaraho? Bechoshin for her words implies Holodivetzara in choshin, which implies we're not concerned about anything that Sarah might say. That goes with Reb Taufin over here in our Mishnah, who says we completely discount anything that Sarah says. Therefore, the Bas Yisrael is still allowed to eat truma as if the Sarah had not come and said anything. Shemamina? Good. That proves it. That indeed the halachas of Reb Taufin. Another case, now the Mishnah is going to talk about more cases where Reb Taufin and Reb Akiva have a similar argument, where Reb Taufin has a certain argument about what to do, and Reb Akiva says, it's a similar expression, that's not the proper way to avoid the Avera, you have to do something else. Number one, Kiddush Achas Mechamish Nashim. If somebody was Mekadish, one of five women, and now he doesn't know which one he was Mekadish. Kolachas Emeres, Oisi Kiddush. Each one is claiming he was Mekadish me. Now, we're not talking about over here, by the way, we're not talking about a case where, for example, there were five women standing over there and he handed out Kedushin and said, whoever wants can be in Scottish with this. That's a different matter. That's called Kedushin. That can be if there's sisters involved with Kedushin, Lenishin, Lemsir, Labia. We talked about that briefly earlier in the Masechta. This is, he was in Scottish, some woman, for sure, the regular way, Harayat Makudeshasi, but now he forgot and none of them has a clear daya either. Maybe they were standing together, maybe it was at different times, whatever. But he doesn't know. So, noisin get mechalachas v'achas, he has to give a get to each one, just in case, because to be matter her to be married. What about the ksuba that he owes each one of them? Now, normally, by the way, there's no ksuba after kedushin. Normally, ksuba only comes into effect after nisuin. But there were places, and we discussed in various places in ksubas, that there were places where the minhag was that the husband was mashabed himself to the ksuba already from the kedushin.
Well, he's lying about it.
They get married kind of, that's true. Yeah, well, each one got a guess, so yeah, just in case, yeah. But the main point is, the fact that he has to give all of them a guess, there's no machlokes about that. That's a given. But what happens to the ksuba? According to the Taufin, maniach ksuba b'neinu mistalik. You put the amount of the ksuba down between them, not literally between them, it's not like you can have them fight over it, but in other words, you put it in Beis Din in escrow or mistalik, and then you can leave. When Beis Din figures out, when one of them is able to bring a raya, when they're able to bring the Edim or whoever, they use Mekadosher, then fine, you can collect it.
Oh, that's
yeah. That's different of character.
And then that means in reality, if they can find out who it is, then the rest...
Then she'll get the kuba. Oh, what's going to happen to the other one? Maybe we would say that...
She'll have to get married to Kaina.
Maybe. But we'll talk about actually at the beginning of the next parak. We're going to talk about the issue of chalitza, where it turns out that the chalitza was not necessary. Where, in that case, if nevertheless you can, we still say that even though theoretically you can make an announcement that the chalitza was no good and therefore she can marry a kohen, we don't want to rely on that because what if somebody heard the announcement? What if somebody saw the chalitza but didn't hear the announcement and then they're going to think a chalitza can marry a kohen? Could be it's the same thing over here. Could be that death and chalitza are different because a grusha marrying a kohen is deraisa, so people know about that. I don't know. Anyway, Rav Akiva says that's not the right way to get out of the Aveira. What's the Aveira? We'll talk about in the Gemara. No, he actually has to give a get and a ksuba to each one of them. We penalize him for a reason that we'll discuss in the Gemara. Another case, Bozal Echad Mechamisha, if one person stole from five different people, or from one of five different people, he didn't steal from all five, he stole from one of the five, the Eni Adem is a Gozal, he doesn't know which one of the five he stole from. Again, each one says he stole from me. Same idea. Maniach zela b'neinu mistalik b'vira taufin. Or taufin says that you can just put the stolen amount down in between them, or meaning you put it in based in an escrow or whatever, and you can go. You've been yotze what you need to, and then everybody else, it's up to them to prove it. And again, taufin says that no, that's not the right way. You have to actually pay each one of them. The Gemara discusses in Bava Metzia, by the way, that even according to the Gemara discusses, even according to Reb Taufin, yeah, if he wants to be Yotze Yidei Shemayim, if he wants to be Yotze to really be forgiven by the Eveshter for the Aveira, then yes, he'll pay each one of them, Misafik. But here we're talking about just what Beis Din can make him do, basically. So the Gemara starts out, Kiddush Katani, Baal Loi Katani. Now what do we see? The first case of the Mishnah is saying that he was Mekadosh, one of them. Regular Kiddushin, which we assume means Bekesef or Beshtar. not Baal, not that he did Kedusha Be'ila, which are valid Kedusha Me'atorah, but we've learned before and we'll learn again in the future that you get Malkus for you get Malkus Maudus for doing such a thing. It's a pretty specific thing to do to be Mekadosh Be'ila. On the other hand, Gozal Katani, Lokach Loi Katani. On the other hand, the second case of the Mishnah is that he stole. Not that, for example, the Mishnah could have mentioned a similar case. He bought something from one of five people, and he's not sure which one. Now, the difference is basically, Kiddush is something you're allowed to be with Kaddish women. There's no issue in it. Be'ila, though, we're saying there's an issue in it. It's an issue of Makas Magus. It's an issue of Midrabana. Similarly, buying, there's no issue in it, but stealing, there is. So the first part of the Mishnah is talking about that he did something which is in and of itself perfectly mutter. He just now doesn't know which one he did it with. And the second one is he did something that's also. The second half of the Mishnah, yeah. The problem with that is, Mani Masnissin. So who is our Mishnah like? Loi Tanakama v'loi Rav Shimon Elazar. Then in that case, the Mishnah does not go according to the Tanakama or Rav Shimon Elazar of the following braisa, the Tanya.
Can you have a half Mishnah goes according?
We try not to do that unless it's really necessary. And in this case, it seems, I mean, the whole reason, the second half, neither half of this Mishnah really belongs in this Perek at all. The whole reason we're bringing them in is because we have similar machlokes in Rabbi Taufan and Rabbi Akiva. Presumably, they were all learned by one Tana, and we're putting them all together for memory, for memorization reasons.
Oh.
No, yeah. What's the braisa, the Tanya? Rav Shimon Elazar, I mean, that he and the Chacham of his time had a machlokas within what Rav Taufan and Rav Akiva are arguing about. What cases are they arguing about? So machlokas on a machlokas. Lo nechaku Rav Taufan and Rav Akiva al shekiddush achas mechamish nashim ve'ni yadei eze kiddush. There's no question. There's no machlokas of Rav Taufan and Rav Akiva if he was mekadosh, meaning bekesef or b'shtar, one of five women, and he doesn't know which one he was mekadosh. There's no question, shemaniach ksuba b'neinu mustalik, that you can just put the ksuba down, the payment down, and go away. You don't have to do anything more. Alma nechalku, what is the machlokas? Rav Shimon Elazar says, al shabaal, if he did kedusha be'ila with one of the five of them. Where kedusha be'ila, the vort is that Rashi says the gina, well, there's two things. There is the fact that we said that it's also midrabanan. There's also the fact that the gina oisa, Rashi says, at the first Rashi on the Gemara. The gina oisa b'kiddush b'ya. They even megana her. He dishonored her by doing such kiddushin. So therefore, Reb Taufan Oymer, even so, maniach suba b'neinu mustalik. Reb Taufan says it doesn't matter that he did something which is also. Nevertheless, he can still get away with just paying one ksuba. And Rabbi Akiva, whereas Rabbi Akiva says, since he did something which is aser, and since in particular, since he was megana her, since whichever one he did kedusha be'ila with, he was megana her, he treated her dishonorably, then we cancel him and make him have to pay each one of them. That's according to Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So according to him, Rabbi Akiva would say only when he did something which is aser. If he's done something that's mutter, if he's done, for example, kedusha kesef, then Reb Shimon Elazar is saying that even Rabbi Akiva would agree that one ksuba payment is enough. And conversely, similarly, he says, "L'nechlaku Reb Taufan Reb Akiva al shalokach mechaf machmisha bnei adam." Similarly, he continues that Reb Taufan and Reb Akiva are not disagreeing in a case where a person bought something from one of five people. Ve'eni yadei man lokach, and he doesn't know which one he bought from. Shemaniach zmei mechaf bnei mustalik, that then he can just put down the money in front of them and leave. L'nechlaku al shagazol mechamisha the machloikus. Again, according to Reb Shimon Elazar, it was only if he did an issur, he stole from them. Even so, Rav Taufan says that he can put the gzela down and leave. And Rabbi Akiva, I'm actually shalom gzela chalacha b'achad. Rabbi Akiva says he has to pay each one. Now, that's just Rav Shimon Elazar. We don't have another Tana in that braisa, but by implication, Rav Shimon Elazar, the kiddush for lokach leplegi, if he's saying that they were not disagreeing by kiddush and lokach, miklal the Tanakama sava plegi, which implies that there must be a Tanakama who he's responding to who says they do. So Rav Shimon Elazar comes in. We're entering this braisa in the middle of the conversation. The Tanakama has said that they argue in all cases. And Rav Shimon Elazar says, no, they don't argue in the cases. You're talking about only in these cases. So now we have to look at our Mishnah. Since he's saying that they don't argue by Kiddush and Lokach, where he did something that's mutter, Mikal the Tanakama Sava Pligi implies that there's a Tanakama who holds they argue even in those cases. So now we're back to the question, Mani, who is our mission alike? Whose understanding of the machlokas of Tavar and Rabbi Akiva is our mission alike? E Tanakama listening Kiddush for Lokach. If if our Mishnah goes according to the Tanakam, to the implied Tanakama of that Braisa, then fine, the first part says Kiddush, but the second part, instead of Gazel, should say Lakach. Irav Shemin Elazar, listening Baal v'Gazel. And according to Shemin Elazar, the first part should say Baal Achad Mechamisha, meaning that he did Kiddush Be'ilah, and the second one would be Gazel. The answer is La'olam Shemin Elazar. No, you could say the whole Mishnah goes according to Shemin Elazar's understanding. Well, my Kiddush, Kiddush Be'ilah. So what is the Kiddush? In our Mishnah, doesn't mean that he did normally Kiddush, we would assume means Bishtar of a Kesef. Here it means Be'ilah. And then why Taka does the Mishnah mention two cases? So Tana Kiddush Le'idiach HaKoychad Rav Akiva. So it tells us the case of Kiddush to tell us how far Rav Akiva goes. Da'afagav the Isura D'Rabbanan of it, even though you could argue all he did was Isur D'Rabbanan. It's not an Isur D'Araisa. Maybe you should treat that more leniently. Nevertheless, Kanis, nevertheless, he still cancels the guy. He has to pay the ksuba to each one of them. And the Aruch HaNer points out, the vote is, that's why Rashi had to mention this business about Dina. If it was just a matter that he was over on an Issu D'Rabbanan, fine, an Issu D'Rabbanan is an Issu D'Rabbanan, but he didn't necessarily harm each one of them that we should cancel him so far and make him have to pay, we're going to give him Malkus, but we shouldn't have to make him pay five ksubas, one to each one, only because he actually did something against them themselves. Besides the Issu D'Rabbanan, he harmed them themselves by Magana them, by treating them disrespectfully like that, by doing Kiddush Ibiya. Well, only one of them, but one of them is enough already. Then that's reason enough for us to cancel him financially. And Gozal Lahidiach HaKoychad Rav Tarfon. Conversely, then the second case of the Mishnah mentions Gozal, that he stole, which is an Issur D'Araisa, to tell us how far Rav Tarfon goes in Mimekel. To Afgah be Issur D'Araisa of it, even though he did something which is also D'Araisa. Nevertheless, like Conis, he doesn't cancel him, and he makes him just pay the one Tela and put it in base din and leave.
That's where I understand. Gets punished and he has to feel the second half of the soul that I see.
That's the thing. So we're saying that even so, Rav Tarfon would still be makel on him. I mean, the Gemara in Bava Metzia has a long discussion about it over there. Are we talking about where the guy voluntarily admits, or is it that they have to schlep in the base team? If he voluntarily admitted, then one idea would be Rav Tarfon wants to be makel on him in order to make it easier for him to do tshuva.
Right.
Here, by the way, the halacha is like Rav Akiva in both these cases. Here, we don't have any the Gemara telling us anything about the halacha being like Rav Tarfon, so it goes back to the usual rule that the halacha is like Rav Akiva. Right. Right.
Even though it's
talking
about
Rav Tarfon. Yeah. No, it's only Rav Tarfon. Within that, you have Rav Shimon Elazar and the Chachamim arguing what they mean. No. In other words, between Rav Shimon Elazar and his Chachamim of his time, who are arguing what cases were Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva arguing about.
Oh.
So the fact is, you still have the halachas like Rav Akiva against Rav Tarfon. Which understanding of Rav Akiva, I'm not sure, actually. Mishnah says, Ha'isha Shahocha Hiyo Bailon Nesayam, Uvnoimahim, a woman where she and her husband went overseas together with their child. So we knew already at the time she had a child. We assumed then that she was potter, that she'll forever be potter from Yibum, because even if her husband dies, her child will still be alive. Ubava Oma Mes Baili Bachach Mesbini, and she comes back and says, my husband died, and then my son died, so I'm still potter from Yibum. Nemenes, then good, we believe her. Because since she originally had the chazaka that she was mutter, it's called a Pesha Osu Vapesha Hidir. She is answering herself by saying my husband died, but then she's being matter herself by saying that it was after that only afterwards did my son die. But mesbni vachkach mesbaili ainin hemenes. But if she says the other way around, first my son died, then my husband died, which means that I'm chayev in yibum or chalitza, ainin hemenes. We can't believe her because she doesn't have we're not going according to the original chazaka. She had a chazaka originally that she's potter from Yibum, and now she wants to put herself into a chazaka that she wants to put herself into a situation where she's chayev. However, but we do have to be concerned about what she says. Maybe after all, she is telling the truth. And therefore, just to be on the safe side, she needs chalitza, but she can't do Yibum. Yeah, because it's similar to what we said before, that we believe her to say her husband's dead in order to prevent her from being an aguna, but not in order to prevent her from either. So that's the thing. We don't believe her when it's a matter of getting herself out of Yibum because she may hate her Yavam. On the other hand, we also don't believe her when it's a matter of getting into Yibum because maybe she loves her Yavam and wants to marry him, even though maybe she shouldn't. So therefore, so in cases like this, We won't, we'll believe her husband's dead, but we won't necessarily believe her as far as the order of things unless it's supported by the chazaka. We're going to talk more about that in the next perek, about when we have the chazaka on her side versus against her.
And after death, you still not marry your brother because he was the brother of your
husband. Right, exactly.
You know, you're still a husband.
Right, the only way it's mutter is if there was no child, or if there was no child at the time the husband died. That's Yibum, yeah. Another case, Nitan li ben b'mdinasayam. What if she, when she left, she didn't have a child? Now she comes and says, a child was born to me in b'mdinasayam. So now it's the other way around. The chazaka when she left was that she was chayav in Yibum because she didn't have any children. We mentioned this on Amar Aleph, yeah. V'amra mes b'ni v'achachach mes b'ali, and then she comes back and says, my son died and then my husband died. Nemenes, then good. We believe her to do Yibum because then again, what she's saying matches the original chazaka. No, she didn't have a child, but she says, I had one, and then he died. So again, Apesha also Apesha Hitu. She's asking herself to Yibum by saying, I had a child, but then she herself is Mimata herself by saying, he died before my husband. But Mes Baili Vachkach Mes B'ni Einun Emenes. Again, if she says, my husband died, and then my son died, which means that I'm Potter, I have no Zika. Again, Einun Emenes, we don't believe her. But again, we're concerned just to be on the safe side, B'chaletz Tulem Sebemes. Same idea. Next case, Nitan Li. So we believe her in each case where what she's saying I have to do now or don't have to do now matches the original chazaka that she had when she first left.
Oh, first she left with a child.
With a child, so we knew already she had a child. Yeah. Next case, Nitan liyavam b'mdin sayam. What happens if she comes and says, beforehand we did not know that her husband had a brother. Now she comes and says, overseas, my mother-in-law gave birth to a son, so my husband has a brother, I have a yavam, and Amra mes b'ali v'achkach mes yavami, and she says, my husband died and then my yavam died, or you met yavami v'achkach b'ali, or my yavam died and then my husband died. Nemenes, either way, we believe her, because what does it amount to saying? Beforehand, when she left, we figured she's potter from yavam, because there is no other brother. Her husband is an only child, an only brother. Now, all of a sudden, again, Apesha also Apesha Hitu. She's claiming that I had a brother-in-law, so I should have been Chayiv and Yibum, but he's dead. And here, it doesn't matter the order, whether the husband dies and then the Yavam, or the Yavam and then the husband. Doesn't matter. Either way, there's no more Zika. There's nobody for her to be a Shemeres Yavam to. So therefore, we believe her. Because, again, it matches the original Chazara. But, Ho Chahiyu Vailo V'Yibum Alibdina Sayam. But what if, L'chatchila, when she left she and her husband and her Yavam, so meaning we knew she had a Yavam at the time, Amra mes b'ali v'achkach mes yavami, and she says, my husband died and then my yavam, or yavami v'achkach b'ali, or my yavam died and then my husband died, ain't a nemenes, then we don't believe her. Why? She'ena isha nemenes loyma mes yavami shitinasi. We do not believe a woman to say that my yavam died in order to allow her to remarry, to marry Lashuk, in other words. V'loy mesa achoiz, because again, we trust her eders as far as not making herself an aguna. Therefore, we believe her to say that her husband's dead. But in any other case, no. So we don't believe her eders to say that her brother-in-law is dead. Right, exactly, because she hates him and wants to. Right. The opposite way would also be. It doesn't. Either way, she's saying, I'm potter from Yibum because my yavam is dead. And my husband's also dead. Either way, we can't necessarily say that we should believe her. What if the Yavam is still alive and she's just trying to get out of it because she hates him?
Yeah.
So she's stuck basically. She's not going to be able to get married to anybody else because that would be a Yavam. What if she's a Yavam? What if she's a Shemeret Yavam and she's a Yavam Lashuk? She's not allowed to. Yeah. So she's not allowed to say mes yavami shitinase, that she should be allowed to remarry anybody else. We also don't believe a woman to say that her sister died in order to allow her to marry her sister's husband. We know you're not allowed to marry a sister while you're not allowed to marry you're not allowed to marry your wife's sister as long as your wife is alive. Even if you're divorced, you're not allowed to marry her sister as long as she's alive. So if you have Rachel and Leah, where Rachel was married to somebody. We don't believe Leah to come and give Eidos that Rachel is dead, which then I should be allowed to marry Rachel's husband. Because again, it's not a matter of Igun. Don't bother marrying your sister's husband. Go marry somebody else. You're not stuck. What opposite way?
Marry her husband. If her husband died, you can't marry the brother.
Right, that would be you, but only if there's children, right?
Right,
only if there's no children.
But if she's not, I'm just somehow, you don't believe her.
Right.
Say you.
Similarly, we don't believe a man to say my brother died, that I should therefore be allowed to do Yibum with his wife. Because again, it's not a matter of ego. We can go marry somebody else. We also don't believe a man to say my wife is dead, which then we should allow him to marry her sister. None of us, see, go marry somebody else.
That's allowed.
Yeah, because a man can have two women, can have two wives. So, the Gemara asks, we're going to relate this back to our Mishnah in a minute, but it seems like first of a side question. Now, as background for this question, it's like this. When it comes to giving a get, usually we're familiar with the idea the husband gives hands the get to his wife. Each one of them can also make a shliach for the purpose. The husband can make what's called a shliach halacha, where the shliach's job is to bring it to point B and give it to the woman, but the get doesn't take effect until the woman or her shliach receives it. The woman is able to appoint a shliach kabbalah, which is that it doesn't have to be that she herself receives it. Once the shliach receives it, it goes into effect. Now, normally, only the man can appoint a shliach halacha, and only the woman can appoint a shliach kabbalah. The question that we're going to have over here is there a case, maybe, where the husband is able to declare a shliach kabbalah? Namely, bar minei rav amir Nachman, ha-mezakeh get le'ishti b'mkayim yavam mahu. What if a person is mezakeh get to his wife in a case where there is a yavam involved? Meaning, he's childless, so once he dies, his wife is going to be chayav yibum, or chalitza. He wants to fashvar her that. He knows that his brother is a difficult kind of guy and it's going to be a problem. So therefore, he wants to give his wife a get. Now, normally, we would say he doesn't have the right to appoint a shliach kabbalah because for a woman to receive a get is a choiv. It's a bad thing for her. And ain chovin la'adam shalai b'fanav. You can't do a choiv for somebody unless in their presence. Here, we could argue it's a schus. She would rather be able to get out of not having to marry this yavam. Therefore, it's a schus. Zachin la'adam shalai b'fanav. That's exactly the question. Kibin desan yalei schusula. Do we say since the yavama usually hates the yavam, then it's a schus for her to have to avoid the whole problem, and therefore v'zachan la'adam shalei b'fanav. Therefore, you can create a schus for somebody even not in their presence. So he's able to create this shliach for her even without her consent. Or on the other hand, sometimes you have the yavama loves the yavam. Chayvula. So then it would be a chayv for her. V'in chavin la'adam shalei b'fanav. You can't create a chayv for somebody not in their presence. Amalei, he says, Tanena. Well, look at our Mishnah. We said, in the various cases in our Mishnah, in both the cases where we said that she's trying to prove that she needs Yibum, or that she doesn't need Yibum, we used in both places the same expression, Choshishin L'dvareha, that we're Choshish for what she said, and therefore, V'choletes V'lei Mitzia Bemes. So what's the implication? We don't say that, again, we don't say, for example, in the case where she's trying to pater herself from Yibum, for sure she hates her Yavam, and therefore we completely know that what she's saying is a lie, or vice versa, in the other case where she's trying to establish that I am Chayv and Yibum, we don't say for sure she loves him, and therefore it's a suffix. So therefore, by a guess also, it has to be a suffix. Does she love him or does she hate him? It could be as Chayv, it could be as Chus. So therefore you can't do that. You can't make shliach kabbalah without her consent. And Tosfos points out that when it said the expression that the Mishnah uses v'choshen means she has to do chalitza. It's not even, for example, you could have a case where she says, you know what, where at first she says I was chayev in yibum, and then later on she clarifies, she gives an amasla. She gives like an excuse. You know what? There was a certain reason why I said that. There was somebody else who was pestering me to marry him, let's say, for example. I told him, you know what? I'm a Shemeres Yavam, go away. But that wasn't really the truth. And we could believe that. But here, the Mishnah doesn't seem to be saying that. Chalitzes. She has to do Chalitza no matter what. So that implies, in other words, that it really is a matter of a suffix to begin with. Okay, so that's that. What about another case? Amalei Rabbi Nilarova. So the husband cannot be mezakeh the get. That's the answer. Yeah. Right.
And if he was.
And if he was what? Then that's a possible get. Or it's possible misafik, I guess. It would be possible. It would be a get me. It would be possible a get misafik.
You need to have chalitza from the oven misafik.
Well, then she'd probably have to have chalitza misafik. Yeah, I guess. A similar question. Amalei Ravina L'Rava. What about Hamazaka get le'ishtei b'makom katata mahu? What about, forget about a yavam over here. If you were just a regular husband and wife, but they're not getting along, they're fighting. If he's mazaka get to her, does that work? Do we argue, kivin di iswat katata ba'adei z'chutzula? Again, they're fighting, so maybe it's a z'chutz for her. She'd rather be out. Or maybe after all, she'd rather have the pleasure of being of the goof, of being married. Maybe in other words, yeah, as bad as a marriage is, it's still better than not being in one. Tashma, this famous expression, it's a few places in Shas. Tavla Mesav Tandu Milamesav Armalu. People say it's better to live as two bodies than to live as an almana, than to live as a widow. But yeah, basically, a woman figures, you know, as long as I'm married, at least there's another warm body here, basically. Well, it was supporting me, we're going to get to actually in the next couple of expressions in the Gemara, but yeah. So now the Gemara is going to bring three other expressions that illustrate this idea, that people say that a woman, no matter what kind of a yokel her husband is, at least she has the pleasure of being married. Abayama, the Shumshamana Gavra, even if her husband is short and tiny like an ant, Shumshamana is an ant, Kurse ben Chauta Ramullah. Nevertheless, her chair is among the important, among the noble women. Like, in other words, she still considers herself a chosh of a person. I have a husband. Therefore, I'm a Messias, therefore. Rapapa Amar, a similar expression, the Nakta Gavra, even if her husband is somebody who combs wool, which is a very low down, a very degraded kind of job. Nevertheless, Tikri b'seif b'bava b'tesiv. She will still call at the door of the house b'tesiv and sit there like, look, I'm waiting for my husband. I'm proud to have him as my husband, even though he's a batlan like that. The Goyim have a different gears over here. Instead of dinapsa with a tzaddik, dinapsa with samach, which is a vegetable similar to a turnip. So even if you're, again, similar to the one with the ant, even if it's like short and wide and disgusting looking like a turnip, still, you know, she's proud to call him her husband. Rav Ashi Amar, dekulsa gavra, even if the man is somebody who people make fun of him, and Rashi says shemet psul mishpacha, that there's a psul in his family. Nevertheless, she doesn't ask. She doesn't even ask from him for lentils for her soup. Like again, in other words, I'm so happy to be married that I don't need anything from him. I'll be married. Tosus has a different explanation that kulsa means somebody who sells cabbages. Like again, you know, a really minimum wage job. There's various explanations that I've seen from a number of different mafarshim and various drushas from Achronim why the Gemara brings these four statements, these four examples. Different ones. One of them is because there's four different aspects in a marriage. There's you're compatible physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, etc. And so we're talking like each one of those. And even if one of them is lacking, at least you have something. One of the Farshim Yaakov makes a comparison with the dinim about who's allowed and not allowed to be a king. There's no issue on a short person being a king, for example. So even if her husband is short, she still feels herself like a queen. And even if he's denapsa gavri, he has a low down job like a wool sorter. So okay, he's possible to be a king then, because a king can't be somebody who had a low down job like that. Nevertheless, she's still proud to call him her husband. She'll still sit by the door waiting for him, etc. Tana, and we learn in a braisa. So why taka? Why after all? Even if he's low down and short and this and that, why taka? What's in a woman's interest to stay married? But kulan mizanis b'terlus balein. No matter what, the woman always knows that as long as I'm married, if she's mizana, I'm able to attribute the child to my husband. In American law, it's like that also, that usually when a married woman is pregnant, we assume that the child comes from her husband. So like this, they always know that being married, if nothing else, has the advantage that any children I have from Znus will be thought to be my husband's, and he'll raise them and support them and so forth. I don't know. Mishnah says, Ha'isha Shahala, technically today, is Daf was supposed to be Kofi Tet, so we'll see what we can manage.
So the whole thing with that, she gets invited, so that's why she's happy. Right?
No,
that's why I read it.
Yeah. Ha'isha shahalach b'ayla, but more cases, again, we're going to be continuing on this topic of cases where we're not sure, because they were overseas, whether she's chayiv in yibum or not. Ha'isha shahalach b'ayla v'tzaratzen of dinasiyam, a woman who her husband and her tzara went overseas. Now remember, if her husband has children from any of his wives, then she, the one who stayed back home, is potter from yibum, or chalitza. So, uvog amul ames b'aylech, and they come and tell her your husband is dead. Loiti nasev, loiti siyabim ad shateid Hashem umeresi tzarasa. She can't remarry anybody else. She can't do yibum to the brother-in-law until she finds out whether her tzara was till she finds out whether her tzara was pregnant. Because if her tzara ends up having a child, then there's no yibum, but then she doesn't need chalitza. If the tzara ends up not having a child, then she has to do yibum. So like this, she's in between. She's stuck. Now, on the face of it, you could argue, let her do chalitza, and we'll sort things out later. The Gemara will discuss it on the base why we can't do that. Next case, Hoysala Chamos. On the other hand, if she had a mother-in-law in the Dinas Hayam, and again, beforehand, there was no Yavam, so now the question is, maybe her mother-in-law had a child, meanwhile, and now all of a sudden she's chayv in Yavam. And in Cheshesha, she doesn't have to worry about that. What? Yeah. Well, if the mother-in-law is here, then we know when she has a child. Yeah. Yotza malaya chesheshes. Whereas when the mother-in-law left to go overseas, she was already pregnant, then chesheshes. Then you do have to be concerned. The Gemara is going to explain, basically, that normally you don't have to be, we're going to discuss it, Meir versus the Chachamim. The idea is, according to the Chachamim, normally you don't have to worry about that maybe she had a child, because when you get down to it, out of all the pregnancies out there, first of all, half of them are boys, half of them are girls. If she has a girl, it's anyway not an issue. And even among the boys, some of them are stillbirths, or miscarriages, or whatever. So it comes out the boys are immune. Whereas if she was pregnant already, then that sort of damages the chazaka. Then already we know she's pregnant, so then already there's more of a chance. There's more statistically, there's more of a chance that there's too much of a chance basically that it was a boy.
And someone say, talk about it. Average of 25, and her brother-in-law was born. Just make it wait until.
Yeah, that we know that from before. Yeah, as long as the new brother was born, even a moment before the first brother died, then yeah, he's like a kliyabum. Yeah. Rabbi Yeshua in a cheshesh. Rabbi Yehuda says that even if the mother-in-law was already pregnant, you still don't have to worry about it because there's still a lot of possibilities. She might have miscarried. It might be a girl, etc. So the Gemara starts off, my heat sarasa. Now, what was the expression in the expression in the Mishnah was that the woman who stayed home is not allowed to remarry or do yibum. Ad shatei d'shemu mubaris he sarasa. What's the extra word he? The answer is harkamashmal and lahat tzara or dechayshin, and it means we are concerned that maybe the tzara who went with the husband might be pregnant and might have had a child. Avol tzara achriti lechayshin. We do not have to be concerned that what if this husband went and married a third wife while he was overseas and had children with her. That already we don't have to worry about. Then Mishnah said loyti nasev loyti siyabim b'chola, that she cannot marry and she cannot do yibum. So b'shleima yibum yiloy. I can understand why she can't. We'll talk about Haman Bey's how long she has to wait. The case again was that you had a man has two wives, Rachel and Leah. He left Rachel at home to hold down the fort, and he went with Leah overseas. They went on a cruise. Now people tell her that the husband is dead, but Leah, who went with him on the cruise, may have meanwhile had a baby or may be pregnant or whatever. So therefore we say that Rachel back home has to be choshish. She can't do anything, right? So b'shleima yabumi loy. I can understand why she can't do yibum. The duma ma'abra, because her tzara might be pregnant. But kapoga be'eshesach d'araisa. And then if she does yibum, it would be an issur of eshesach, which is an issur d'araisa, an issur karis. Ella loyti nasi amai. Ella loyti nasi. But when we're saying she can't marry to lashuk, yeah. Amai, why? What's the problem? Holachacha roiv nashim. Why don't we just follow the majority of women? V'roiv nashim is abra's fieldus. Most women do become pregnant and have healthy children. So therefore, on the face of it, there's more reason to assume. And remember, as far as Yibum is concerned, as far as her being potter from Yibum, not like in the second case of the Mishnah where it has to be a boy. In the first case of the Mishnah, either a boy or a girl potters her from Yibum. So then, odds are that her tzara did have a child.
Yeah.
It could be a girl, it could be a boy, it doesn't matter. So then why are we saying that she can't marry? Do we have to say then that our Mishnah, the first part of our Mishnah, is going according to a mayor who is Choshesh Lemi'uta, which we're going to talk about soon where we see this. We had it earlier in the Masechta. And then the problem with that would be the halacha is not like the mayor. The halacha is like the Chachamim, that we go according to the Rav. So we'd rather not have to say that our Mishnah goes according to the mayor. The answer is, Afilu Tamer Rabbanan. No, because you could even say that our Mishnah goes according to the Rabbanan, who say we don't have to worry about the Mi'ut. Because there's two kinds of roiv and miut, basically. There's one roiv and miut, which is a matter of statistics. Statistically, for example, most women have become pregnant and have healthy children. But the fact that there are a million women out there who do that doesn't affect our million and first woman. She's a person of her own. She has her own body. It's a statistical one, but the roiv doesn't in any way affect her.
Yes, the girl.
Well, that's neither here nor there. If it's a girl, it still pops her from Yibum. It's only in the second case, in the case of the mother-in-law, that you have to worry about it being a boy. We'll get to that later. But right now, we're talking about the first case of the Mishnah, where we don't know whether her tzara, the only possibilities are either her tzara had a child or didn't have a child. Now what we're saying is like this. According to the mayor, you have to worry about the miut, that there's a miut of women who never become pregnant or who miscarry. We're saying, even according to the Rabbanan, that yes, most women eventually become pregnant, most married women become pregnant and have children, but that's called ruba de lesa kamon. That is a roiv that's not in front of us. In other words, it's a roiv based on statistics. If you crunch the numbers, you find there are more women who have children who have viable children than don't. Then you have something called Ruba de Issei Kamon, where you have the Roiv is actually in front of us. For example, classic case is that one that the Gemara is going to mention now, well, two that the Gemara is going to mention now, are one is when the Sanhedrin votes on something, when a Beis Din votes on something, you have right now in front of us, there's, it's 13 votes this way and 10 votes that way, or whatever. That's called Ruba de Issei Kamon. We actually have the Roiv in front of us right now to determine with. So, ki az the Rabbanan bosa ruba, you know when the Rabbanan say that you go according to the roiv, ruba de ise kamon. They only do that when it's a roiv where the roiv is actually in front of us right now. Gurin teisha chanuyas, for example, the classic case about the nine stores, you have a case where there are nine stores that sell kosher meat and one that sells shefa meat, and you walked into one of those, you found a piece of meat, you found a package of meat on the ground, you don't know which of the stores it came from, you can assume 9 out of 10 it came from the kosher one. The Sanhedrin, or in the Sanhedrin when they vote. Avo ruba de lesse kamon, but when you have a roiv that's just based on statistics, that the roiv of women in the world are not in front of us, why also Rabbanan bosa ruba, then maybe even the Rabbanan would agree you can't go according to the roiv. Because each woman is an independent entity. The fact that all the other women out there have children doesn't tell us anything about this particular one. That's why, you're telling me that Rabbanan make that distinction between a ruba, between a roiv that is and isn't in front of us. But what about the case of a katan and ktana, which were, as far as doing yibum, which we'll talk about in a minute, the ruba the lesser kamon, that's also a roiv based on statistics. It's not, there's no roiv in front of us. And yet the Rabbanan say that you can go according to the roiv and allow a katan and ktana to do yibum. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa, and we've had this earlier in the Masechta, that a mayor says that a katan or ktana cannot do chalitza and cannot do yibum. So the Chum said to the mayor, Yofa, Amar Tashen Chotzen. It's very good you're saying that they can't do chalitza because ish ksiv parsha, because it says the word ish, ish lakachatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatatat has to be by mitzvah. Or makshin and ish le'ish. And we make a hekesh between the man and the woman, because we're also yivim toy. So therefore, it means that she also has to be of age. So we had, in a previous perek, we had the opinion of Rabbi Yossi that she doesn't. The Rabbanon disagree with that. The Rabbanon said that she has to be a gdol also, and that's the halacha. So I can understand the Chachamim are saying to the mayor, why you're saying that they have to be gdolim as far as chalitza. Why aren't you allowing a yavam to do a katan and a ktana to do yibum? You need das. You don't need das. We learned back in the sixth perek that a bar you've been v'shogig, been mezid, been v'oynus, etc. It's still kinda. You don't need das. Right, but here we're saying here what it is the we said isha hiknu loy min shmaim. You don't even need to do midaraisa kedushin of your own. Only midrabanan do you need to do kedushin. You need to do minor. But midaraisa you just need bia, and that's it, because it's a continuation of the previous marriage, which was daraisa. Amalahem, so the mayor sells them, because cotton shemi yimot is tzrius, because what happens if the cotton turns out when he grows up to be a tzrius, who is not able to do yibum, and we learned before he's not shayach to yibum, and therefore he would be over on the issue of eshes ach, when there's no mitzvah. Ketana shemati yimot ha'ilonis. Ketana might turn out to be an ilonis. V'nivtzu pogin ve'eva, and it comes out therefore that they've had relations with an eva. And now, of course, most of the children in the world will not become tzrisim or ilonis. So the Rabbanan Sabri, so the Rabbanan holds Zilbot the Ruba Diktanim. Let's go statistically according to most Diktanim. Rav Tanim Lav Tzrisim, you know. Most Tanim are not Tzrisim. Zilbot the Rav Tanis, Rav Tanis Lav Ilonis, you know. So we see that Rabbanan do not make that distinction between a statistical Rav versus a Rav that we actually have in front of us. Okay. Ela Machbarta, Masnissin Rameyahi. Okay, so we have to say, fine, that the first part of our Mishnah does not, goes according to Rameyah. Does go according to Rameyah. But so what are you telling me then? That the Mishnah goes according to the mayor, Ema Sefer. Look at the next part of the Mishnah. And again, we would rather assume that one Mishnah is all according to one Tana, when possible. So look at the Sefer. We said if she had a mother-in-law, Ena Chayshesh. We said she doesn't have to worry that her mother-in-law had a boy, which now she has a Yavam, and she's a Shemeret Yavam. Amai, why would that be? Let's follow the majority of women. And most women do become pregnant and have children. No, but the mission is not making the distinction of how old this chamois is. The pashtus, of course, yeah, we're talking about that she's... The pashtus, we're talking about... Yeah, well, okay, fine. So, people got married young in those days, too. Her husband himself could just be bar mitzvah or something, you know. Her husband himself could, you know. Even nowadays you have you know the old joke about the difference between an Orthodox conservative and reform wedding, right? That an Orthodox wedding the kala's mother is pregnant, a conservative wedding the kala is pregnant, at a reform one the rabbi is pregnant, etc. So yeah, you know, even nowadays you have cases where you have many families here in Crown Heights where the mother-in-law is still having children when her daughter or daughter-in-law is So. It's like this. Miut mapilois, there's a minority of women who miscarry. V'chola yodas mechtes chorom mechtes nekevis, and of the ones who give birth, it's half boys, half girls. It's actually, nowadays, it's a little bit more. And nowadays, it's actually a little bit more boys. And statistically, nowadays, it's like 105 boys to 100 girls. But okay, yeah. So, smoich miut de mapilois mechtes nekevis. So, therefore, if you put together the miut of ones who miscarry, the 1%, let's say, who miscarry, together with the half female, v'habalus chorim miut, so it comes out that there's chorim of 49% or 40, whatever, less than 50% of the births. So what are we saying over here? According to the mayor, we should be choshish for that. Why are we saying ain't a choshish that we don't have to be concerned that we don't have to be concerned for that miut? No, if you combine together, if you figure out, if 100 women become pregnant, out of those 100, two of them miscarry, 49 have girls, 49 have boys. So if you figure out the 100 pregnancies altogether, you have 51 girls and 49 boys. The boys are the mute. But according to the mayor, if we're trying to say that the missionary is according to the mayor, and the mayor is chayish lemiyota, then why isn't he concerned in the second case of the Mishnah? So for leichush, and therefore we should be concerned. The answer is duma kivin de ichzikol ashuk leichayish. The difference could be, though, that in the second case of the Mishnah, the chazaka, again, we go back to the matter of chazaka. In the second case of the Mishnah, the chazaka beforehand was that she is mutter l'shuk. The chazaka was that her husband doesn't have a brother. So now you want to say, because you choshish lemiyota, therefore you should break that chazaka? You don't have to do it. Even a mayor might agree you don't do that. Whereas Reisha de Ichzak liyibum tiziyab, but then you're back to the question Reisha de Ichzak liyibum tiziyabim. Well, in that case, then in the first part of the Mishnah, there is a chazaka that she was chayev in yibum because the beforehand her tzara was not known to be pregnant. So why are you saying that you're concerned that her tzara might have had a baby? By that same logic, you shouldn't have to be concerned for that. The chazaka was that she was chayev in yibum, so you stick with that chazaka and she should do yibum. Either way, how can you shtalein the whole Mishnah like how according to the mayor? The answer is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, Reisha de Isu Koris Chashu. The difference is, in the first part of the Mishnah, it would be an Isu Koris. If her Tzara ended up having a baby, then for her to, for Rachel, who stayed home, to marry her Yavam, would be an Isu Daraisa. Would be an Isu, no, not an Isu Daraisa, both of them are Isu Daraisa. Would be an Isu Koris. Eishas Achiv. So therefore, Chashashu, so therefore we're concerned even about the, we're concerned that the Tzara might have become pregnant. Whereas in the second case, Sefer de Isu Lav, and the Sefer, if she really is Chayiv and Yibum, and she does not do Yibum, and instead she goes and marries Lashuk, it's only an Isu Lav. Therefore, like Chashashu, so therefore we're less concerned about it. We can stick with the Chazaka. Amar Rava, what are you talking about? The Hadar Isa of Hadar Isa. The fact of the matter is both Yisurim and Hadar Isa. Mali Isu Karis, Mali Isu Lav. Don't you have to be just as worried about an Isu Lav as an Isu Karis? Yeah, they're both Midaraisa. Rashi points out the difference is, yes, when it comes to making Zeris to prevent you from to prevent you from doing an Isur, then yes, you might say that we're more machmer on Isur Karis than Isur Lav. Here it's a matter of, we're saying, it's not a matter of Zera. If she ends up doing Yibum or marrying out Lashuk, as the case may be, she may actually be doing an Isur Daraisa. It's a matter of Sophic, basically. It's not a matter of Zera. So yes, in that case, you have to be just as worried about a Sufik Isu Lav as a Sufik Isu Karis. Elo Amar Rava, no. Reisha Chazaka L'Yibum Merubah L'Shuk. It's like this. It is a matter of Chazaka. But in the first part of the Mishnah, the Chazaka is that she has to do Yibum Merubah L'Shuk, whereas the majority would be against that. The majority would say the majority situation is that the Tzara becomes pregnant and has a child, and therefore she's allowed to marry the Shuk. So you have the Chazaka and the Rav contradict each other. The Chazaka lay Odif Kiruba. Now the Chazaka is not as strong as the Rav. Therefore, so therefore, if you add together the Mios, the 2% of women who miscarry, Smoich LaChazaka, and you join that together with the Chazaka, Bahavale Pago Paga, therefore it's a half and half. We consider it evenly balanced. In other words, we say, if it was just a Chazaka by itself, we would say the Chazaka is weaker than the Rav. We'd just go according to the Rav and say, fine, Rav women become pregnant, and that's that. Because among that rove of women who become pregnant, there is a minority, the 1 or 2% who miscarry, so that together with the Chazaka allows us to consider it evenly balanced. And therefore, if it's evenly balanced, lo tinasav, lo tisyabim. Therefore, we don't allow her to marry out Lashuk, and we don't allow her to do Yibum, just in case. Now, in the first part of the Mishnah, we did. We said lo tinasav, lo tisyabim, until she finds out what happened with her Tzara. Sefer, in the Sefer, it's the other way around. The Chazaka and the Rav both are on the same side. Chazaka Lashuk, Merubah Lashuk. The Chazaka was that she was allowed to marry out Lashuk, because the Chazaka was her husband didn't have a brother. The Rav also would allow her to marry out Lashuk, because the Rav would be that you have the miscarriages plus the females. Remember, only if her mother-in-law had a boy, and boys are mute, would it be a problem? So the Chazaka and the Rav go together. So the chance that her mother-in-law had a male is a miut of a miut. Even a mayor is not considered about a miut of a miut. So Mefarshim disagree over here whether this last part that we said over here, what Rava is saying over here, whether it agrees with the previous part of the Gemara or whether it disagrees with it. If we say it agrees, then it means we are saying, after all, that the whole Mishnah goes according to the mayor. Given that the halacha is not like our mayor, then that would mean that the halacha is not like what it says in our Mishnah. On the other hand, other Mefarshim explain, the Rambam Haskins this way, for example, that the Gemara has that Rava is contradicting previous understanding of the Gemara and showing how the whole Mishnah could be going according to the Chachamim, that we don't have to say the whole Mishnah goes according to the mayor. We could be saying the whole Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim, and therefore the halacha would be like it. Like what it says in the Mishnah, that in fact in the first case she can't marry and can't do Yibum until we find out the situation, and on the other hand in the second case with the case of the mother-in-law, then she doesn't have to be then she doesn't have to be choshish unless the mother-in-law was already pregnant at the time. The Rambam does point out one more detail, which we'll get to that part of the Gemara tomorrow. I guess at this point that the one who stayed at home, the Gemara is going to mention tomorrow, that uh, she Now, when you think about it, you have two women involved over here. You have the one who stayed at home, where she doesn't know what happened with the tzara. We have the tzara herself, who doesn't know what happened with the one back at home. What if the one back at home became pregnant before they left? So she has to wait. She has to wait full 9 months just to be on the safe side. But no more the tzara. The tzara, the out of towner, has to wait full 9 months to just in case. But once 9 months have passed, she can remarry. She can do chalitza and remarry manafshach. Because either way, either her tzara had a child and then she's mutar b'shuk, or her tzara did not have a child and neither did she, and then she does chalitza and that's that. So the Rambam explains the first part of the Gemara here. Well, if there's a brother, obviously, right? If they're right. Hebrew lives in Medina, yeah, or she comes back home, whatever, yeah. Right. Yeah, so if the brother-in-law also went there, or if he's living there, yeah. So that's the Rambam explains, the Rambam seems to explain that way, the first line of the Gemara, that lahot tzara hu d'chayshinan, although tzara achuti lechayshinan, that meaning in other words that the tzara who went overseas doesn't have to worry about what happened with the tzara back home. She can assume once 9 months have passed that that's that. Yeah, but usually the roiv is 9 months. Everybody, even we said even a mayor is not choshesh lemilchus. Yeah, we learned in a previous parak that there could be a rabba ketzva allowed the halacha that there could be a pregnancy up to 12 months. We learned in chiddush that Aliyah Navi was born after such a pregnancy.
I might have been
but still, the roiv is 9 months.